Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Mark Garagos is particularly animated in today's episode, so we got that to look forward to. We take a little walk down memory lane talking about Perkins Palace back in the day. Mark used to run that place. And then a theory about Los Angeles, a theory about California, a theory about why we've not been decimated, that weaves in the homeless, that I'm just going to go out on a limb and call it brilliant in advance. So be listening. And also watch us. You can go to our YouTube page. I think it's youtube.com/Adam Carolla. You can watch us do the show if you like. First, I'll tell you about Tommy John. For the next few weeks, or God forbid months, you're going to spend all that time at home. That means comfortable loungewear and underwear. For a limited time, all customers get 20% off site-wise, plus free shipping. This Tommy John loungewear, it is so damn comfortable. The shirts, the bottoms. I mean, I love the t-shirts. You know I love the underwear, but the loungewear is unbelievable. They got the no roll waistband, no wedgie guarantee, no visible panty line for the women, quick draw fly for the men. But if you don't love them, you can get a full refund, but you're going to love them because they're the best, and it's Tommy John. Right, Gary?
That's right. For a limited time, go to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get 20% off site-wide, plus free shipping. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off site-wide, plus free shipping. TommyJohn.com/Adam. Experience comfort.
This is Carolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagos and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice but to get on. Mandate. Get it on. And welcome to the best hour in the universe. I'm Adam Carolla over here. It's Mark Garagos over there. It is Reasonable Doubt. Mark, you're in your office.
I am. I was going to do this from the courtroom, but I haven't tested the Zoom capabilities in there. If next week I may do it from the courtroom, because they just announced, I think, in LA County, we're now on the hiatus until at least May 15th. So that's you and me on the horse trails in the morning with our respective dogs dodging the police tape.
Yeah, there's a horse trail runs basically from my house to Mark's house. They keep putting police tape up, but somebody's knocking it down, I'm guessing.
Oh, my God. La Cunada is filled with the upper white middle class privileged scofflaws who apparently their idea of quarantine is to just, you can't put frickin' police tape up across my horse trail. They take it. It doesn't last an hour across the way.
Well, you know, just up the street, there's a Trader Joe's and there's 80 people standing in a line outside the Trader Joe's. So what's the difference?
6 feet apart. Have you ever seen that? It's the craziest thing in the morning when I walk down Foothill. It reminds me of yesteryear when we used to wait in line for concert tickets.
Yeah. Yeah. Down at the Licorice Pizza or Tower Records.
Or Tower Records. You wait for, I used to do that back in the golden days of K-Rock, because we had the Ticketmaster machine at Perkins Palace, and there used to be people who would wait in line. And what never ceased to amaze me was not the concerts. I mean, you could sell out the Pretenders or Go-Go's or Dead Kennedys in like 30 seconds, but the people who are waiting for campsites, I never understood that, but people would wait in line like overnight to get a campsite.
Well, as I've told Mark before, but it's been a long time. I saw the Plasmatics at Perkins Palace probably three times. And I'll tell you how. First, I had tickets and some of my friends had tickets to this crazy group called the Plasmatics.
They were
Wendy O. Williams. They were sort of punk rock for the sake of punk rock. I remember famously they blew up a Cadillac or Lincoln, maybe.
They blew up Jim Perkins's Lincoln. We couldn't sell that show. So I told Perkins, he was my partner at the time. I said, you know that Lincoln out in the parking lot? He says, yeah. I said, it's now on stage. We're blowing it up tonight. We announced it on K-Rock. That's how we sold out.
I remember standing in the pit, in the mosh pit.
Right.
The stage came up to my chin. The stage must have been five and a half foot off the ground. Right. It wasn't 3 foot. It was 4 or 5 feet. And I remember up in the mosh pit in the front, and I was watching, and there are two things. They took a chainsaw out and they chainsawed a guitar in half. And they chainsawed
That was like an appetizer.
Right. That was that was a palate cleanser before they blew up the Lincoln.
Exactly.
So they chainsawed a guitar in half and they threw it out into the audience. And my buddy Ray got half the guitar and another guy got the other half of the guitar. But the strings were still intact. So the strings were still holding the two halves together. So these two wrestled in the pit. And then eventually one of your security guys dragged, probably three of them, just dragged them out into the lobby because they were wrestling over the guitar, which wasn't fully cut in half.
On the side of where that mosh pit was, as you're facing the stage to the left, there were two doors. And the two doors had a little galley. And there was a pony wall. And those security guards, I had to always tell them, stop throwing the guys head first into the cement wall when they open the doors when they're throwing them out, because that was the standard operating procedure. And we had, you remember Susie and the Banshees?
Mm-hmm.
Susie was on stage once, and they used to, people forget the kind of the high point of the, you could not do this, by the way, in a Corona world. But when you were in the mosh pit, you used to spit on people. You used to spit at the act. Yeah. So somebody kept spitting at Susie, and she didn't like it. And she took the guitar and hit the guy over the head who was spitting on her. And then they threw him outside head first into the cement wall. He ended up walking across the street to the police station, filing charges. And they arrested Susie right after the concert on stage. It was quite a little event.
I remember after they blew up Perkins's Lincoln. It was a Lincoln, I guess.
Yeah, it was a Lincoln. It was one of those suicide door Lincolns.
Yeah. I don't know how they blew it up, but it blew up. I mean, it was a big deal. I felt the concussion. I was right on the edge of stage.
So when we sold out I think we had four shows. And back then the Plasmatics were as big a deal as the Pretenders, because we sold out four Pretenders shows with Chrissy Hynde in no time and did the same thing with the Plasmatics. So then the Plasmatics, I forget the name of the guy who was the manager of the band, but he was great. He had a great sense of promotion. And he then said, we'll play other venues.
Is that them?
Yeah.
That's them at Perkins Palace, Gary?
Sure looks like it, isn't it, Gary?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I was up in the front. I was, I had my chin on the stage. I couldn't believe. I was like, when they were going to blow up this car, I was sitting there going, they're going to use compressed air. she's going to pull out a toilet paper roll that says TNT on it. She's going to light it. She's going to throw it in the back seat. And they're just going to use compressed air, like Universal Studios or something. I didn't know they were going to blow up the car.
These guys, I wish I could remember the guy's name, the manager's name, because then we took him to the Olympic Auditorium. And I said, well, whatever your name is, Mr. Manager, you can't do another car. We just did the car. It was a big deal. We were talking about it on K-Rock repeatedly. In fact, I even had Jim phone into, I think, Rodney on the Rock or Raimondo or in Woodside in the Morning. And so then they said, no, we're going big. We're going a school bus. And so we did it. We bought a school bus, put it on the stage at the Olympic Auditorium. And I'll never forget Wendy trying to blow it up and it wouldn't blow up. She couldn't make the thing go. And finally, there's some guy with like a sledgehammer just trying to beat it to blow it, but it wouldn't work.
Was OSHA? Did OSHA not exist back then? Was there no?
I'd like to say it was a kindler, simpler era, but you know what it was? You could, Pasadena police used to come in there all the time. There was a lieutenant named Blue. Who was passing a PD, and I became very friendly with him because he was, back then I was, 22 and a law student. And this guy used to come in, he and his buddies, and we used to have a pretty good relationship, although they tried to shut us down for serving underage and stuff like that all the time. Pasadena PD wasn't happy because, remember, Perkins Palace was directly across from the Pasadena police station. So you'd have 1,800 kids, and then usually it was a sellout. So there's another 1,000 outside milling around. And the cops just, you know, they were attracted to that like bees to a hive. Right. And they would come in there, and it would be standard operating procedure that they would try to close us down or try to yank the caterer's license that we were using to sell booze up in the mezzanine or something like that. It was a constant battle.
After seeing the Plasmatics, I think three times, the third time is just a weird fluke. Somebody's son, friend of the family, had two tickets and he was like 15 and needed somebody to chaperone him. So I said, hey, I'll go back. But I went out to the parking lot. They pushed a car out into the parking lot after they blew it up. And I was trying to get the steering wheel off the car. And I wanted a memento, you know, a keepsake. Ray had given up his half of the guitar in the lobby, evidently. So we had no
physical.
I don't know how they settled it, but somehow Ray came back down without the guitar. So I needed something physical, something tangible to prove that I saw the Plasmatics at Perkins Palace in 1982 or 3 or whatever it was.
I think it was 81 or 82, right?
81 or 82. And I was trying to get the steering wheel off the car. And one of the security guys was yelling at me to get away from the car. And I was thinking, you just blew it up. What's the, right. You know, what's the difference? There's no value to it. You tried to kill it with a stick of dynamite. God, those were incredible days.
Well, those were what I consider. I know that you and Drew consider a later era to be the highlight of K-Rock. But to my mind, that was K-Rock at its best. I mean, it was on Los Robles. They're in the, you know, you had Woodside, Raimondo, Rodney on the Rock, Jed the Fish. Remember Jed the Fish?
Yeah.
And that lineup of DJs. And I used to have the DJs come over and do the intros to the shows.
They'd bring the bands out, right?
Yeah, they bring the bands out. Exactly. You remember. And that was, I remember when we used to have our Halloween show, and that was when I talked Danny Elfman into doing it, because he was playing high schools back then for Oingo Boingo. And then he did a Halloween show, sold out immediately, and then it became kind of a tradition. We do two Halloween shows on that, and Elfman then parlayed that and Oingo Boingo into smashing success, and he doesn't even have to return my phone calls now.
All the movies. Yeah, I saw Oingo Boingo and probably some groups like The Waitresses, and
Waitresses, Romeo Void. I'd Like You Better If We Slept Together.
Yes,
I think was it, right?
Yeah, I saw them. I saw a lot of those bands at the Country Club in Reseda,
right?
And that Reseda Country Club is later on where Jimmy fought Michael, the maintenance man for Kevin and Bean and K Rock in the Morning. Was back to the Reseda Country Club. So, Mark, you showed, I think you tweeted out a picture of a crowded jury, or I don't think it was a jury, it's a crowded courtroom.
Courtroom, yeah.
What was that?
It's a tragic story. So everybody's been, you know, as I've detailed on this show, we were in the middle of that trial in Utah. I was making motions for mistrial, trying to get somebody to do something, which they wouldn't do. Brooklyn was at the exact same time. The Brooklyn State Court, this was holding court, literally, with all kinds of people in the courtroom, crowded elbow to elbow. Somebody complained, and I think it was a lawyer, and the judge basically told the person who complained, you don't like it, you don't have to show up, we're going forward. That was the last day that judge ever appeared on the bench. He died from corona. And that's
really?
A picture of the court. Yeah, died from corona, which is astonishing to me. But it's now you've got the situation where these jails are becoming, as some people have called it, a petri dish for the corona. And people go, you know, there's various people who have an axe to grind and say, well, you know, let them all die who are in there or something like that, or that, you know, usual empathetic reaction. What they don't realize is that generally, not only are they getting it, but the guards are getting it. The guards are taking it out into the community as well, which as well.
Does anyone ever do a study on the health of the average inmate versus the average citizen? Now, I know the food is rough, but there's a it seems like if you just showed me a picture of 50 random inmates and 50 random free folks in California. So tell me if you think this sounds true, or if this is true or not. You've been to a million prisons. I've been to a couple. If I took 10 random inmates and 10 random people in Los Angeles and put them on a truck scale, who would weigh more? The group of inmates, males the same age, let's say, versus the males the same age in California, people that are on the street.
I think you would have to take it one step farther. You'd have to have that scale calibrated to do body, not just body mass, but muscle content. Because generally, the prisoners, I think, by and large, are in better shape for a number of reasons. You got nothing to do, even if you're in solitary, so you just do body weight exercises. If you're not in solitary and you're in general pop, you're generally doing weights. Generally, you can get drugs in there, but you're not going to be drinking usually the prune juice, so you're not doing a whole lot of alcohol. In fact, I've seen I have a buddy who prosecutes in The Hague and in International Criminal Court. I used to be a DA here in L.A., and he and I have talked on occasion, and a lot of these world leaders who are being charged with kind of international crimes of genocide, they go into custody, so to speak, and custody I use loosely, but they're not drinking, and their health comes back. Generally, a lot of these guys who've got heart problems and things of that nature, they get a little bit healthier. The problem with this thing, though, is when we went crazy 30 years ago and made everything a life sentence, and, you know, three strikes, you're out in California, we have this population that is skews a lot older than it ever did. I mean, it used to be that the demographic for who committed crime
in prison, they're much older than they used to be.
Yeah, it used to be that basically what you did is you cycled the 16 to 18 to 25 male, predominantly brown and black population through prison. And then that demographic, speak about flattening the curve, you know, the crime goes up once a male hits 16, and it tends to come down after you hit 25 to 30, just because for a variety of reasons. Now you've got all these guys who've been languishing in there on life sentences in large part because of drug cases and other kinds of priors. The healthcare costs are astronomical because guys start, you know, look at Charlie Manson. Charlie Manson was in there in his 80s, and he was constantly getting sent out of the prison, or when I say constantly, multiple times, to get cared for outside the prison walls because of his myriad of medical problems. Now, obviously, he's the poster child for somebody who belongs warehoused in prison. But if you start taking a look at others who are of his age, they start hitting 70 and they start needing all kinds of medical attention, the odds on their recidivism go dramatically lower. In fact, they go dramatically lower after you meet your brain fully developed and you get into your 30s and 40s.
Well, what is, speaking of prison, makes me think about Weinstein and this coronavirus. There was all this talk, but I haven't heard anything.
I actually spoke to Harvey.
You did?
I spoke to Harvey. And I can confirm that the prison has at least at one point, because it wasn't very recently, had him segregated because he had corona. And tested apparently positive for corona. I noticed as we got on the air today that the LA County District Attorney, wanting to make sure that he doesn't get away with anything, even though he's serving a sentence of 23 years, even though he's diagnosed and tested for corona, we added another count today, the LA County District Attorney did. So now instead of charging or having four charges, he's got something in the neighborhood of, I don't know, five, six. They just added another count, I think, for false imprisonment, as if that's, you know, and they're not resting. They announced, we will not rest.
Look, you know, in a world where everyone is running for re-election, I mean, everyone on Twitter, everyone, every politician, everyone ostensibly is running for re-election. That's just where we're at. So, you know, they go and they take Dr. Drew to the woodshed and they beat the crap out of him because they're running for re-election. Then they pile on whatever you can pile. Weinstein, look, there's nothing better for you as a citizen or as a politician or a DA to announce that you're going to get Weinstein. No better time to say that. Right.
Who's going to push back? You and me. That's it. Right. There isn't anybody else who's going to say, wait a second here. That this is what our resources are being deployed to. The guy's already doing 23 years. He's 68 years old. He's got coronavirus. He's sitting in a state prison in New York. We're going to bring him here anyway, but let's throw on a couple more counts because that's a worthwhile pursuit of criminal justice.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. You go, this is a good use of our resources. They don't look at things as resources. They look at it as the fountain of plenty. It's just, it never is exhausted. It's just, we can spend all the time and all the money. We can do whatever we want for as long as we want. Other people who run businesses have to make decisions based on some gravity or some finances or something, you know,
I'll give you a perfect, yes. I'll give you a perfect example that today the LA County DA is announcing. Now that they're filing additional either count or counts, okay? Now, contrast that with articles on both the ABA Journal, which is the American Bar Association, the Recorder paper, the Daily Journal, which are the legal papers, talking about all of the law firms, large law firms, not small, not solo practitioners, not my size, kind of medium size, big law firms of corporate America all cutting back, laying off staff, cutting back partner draws by 10 to 25%, not allowing people to take draws, not postponing capital improvements, doing drastic measures, not hiring or deferring hiring classes until 2021, or my favorite, proposing giving law graduates a provisional law license so they don't even have to take the bar exam. All of those things are being done, but a public law firm, because by the way, that's what the LA County DA's office is, a public law firm. They're spending time, resources. There's somebody there who actually is sitting in a computer reviewing some police reports and saying, aha, I know what I've got to do on Good Friday. I've got to add some counts to the Harvey Weinstein indictment.
Yeah, well, it's we always talk about it. It's sort of that scary proposition of unlimited time and unlimited resources where anyone, you just bring up the law. You say so-and-so entity has sued you. Do you want to go to court with this person? Do you want to settle with this person? And people live in the real world have to settle oftentimes, cut checks, make compromises, weigh things out. Like you go, well, we're not guilty of this, but it's going to cost this much. But what if it was just unlimited? You just go, I'll go to court. We'll do court. We'll do it as long as we have to do it. I mean, that's essentially what you're dealing with. And the private sector doesn't have that luxury. I want to know your thoughts about Drew. And I also want to know Weinstein. You spoke to Weinstein. That would suggest to me that there may be some business going on. You tell me how much or as little as you can talk about it. Is this you reaching out to him? Is this him reaching out to you?
Him reaching out to me. You can't call into the jail. And I've taught, look, I've known Harvey for years. I've known people around, I've known some of the people who are accusers of his as well for years. So I, you know, it's a very, at the end of the day, Hollywood is a very, very small kind of community. I mean, the, you know that better than anybody.
He's reached out to you presumably because you're LA based and he's going to have to deal with some LA based charges.
You know, he's reached out. I've talked to him. I don't want to, I can't say what we've talked about, but we've talked, you know, the, I think you, it would be a violation for me to say what, but I think you characterized it once as that I could eliminate the ability to ever have to go to another one of Paulette's cocktail parties ever again if I took the case, I think is what you had presciently said at one point.
Well, you know, I think the thing with Scott Peterson is you could attend the party, but you'd have to stand out in the patio and have the drink. You can come into the house, but if you do Weinstein, you'll never have to get out of your sweatpants.
I could literally be, it would be the, well, I could go on the horse trail. I mean, I, but that would be the one spot, right? In the
every time you pass by one of the housewives' houses, you just hear the shotgun pump from the porch.
Actually, the amount of animus towards Harvey, I think, I know this is hard for a lot of people to believe, pales in comparison to the amount of animus there was to Scott. I don't even think it's close. I mean, the, and I'll tell you why. I've got a theory on this.
Well, hold on, tease it, because okay. I have a theory as well, and I agree with you, but I'd like to know what you think animates people. And I'll tell you first, I'll tell you about the seven deadly sins. Mark, before we talk about the deadly sins, what's the difference between a sin and a crime?
Custody.
Luckily, it's not illegal to sin with seven deadly sins, America's favorite Zinfandel, full-bodied and blended from seven old vine Zinfandels, produced in Lodi, California. It is delectable, and if you're going to be home, and you want to take a little of the edge off and enjoy, might I suggest you partake in some seven deadly zins. Bring some to a, well, it says bring some to a party, but I don't think you're going to a party. Stay at
bring
home.
Bring it to your Zoom party. Have a Zoom cocktail.
Zoom cocktail. I was just talking to Judd Apatow about that last episode. Visit sevendeadlywines.com/doubt. That is sevendeadlywines.com/doubt, and you can buy online, and they'll ship it to you, and or you can pick it up at a store near you. So the fact society hates Weinstein more than Scott Peterson.
No, I think they hate Scott more than Weinstein.
Oh, I'll tell you now. Why. Okay.
Yeah, and but remember, it's certain demographics. I mean, mm-hmm. the demographic of La Cunada, for instance, mm-hmm. is generally families or people who are married, living in the community, and that maybe their kids like us are out of are empty nest or whatever. But it's generally not aspiring single actresses. So. Mm-hmm. So when you have Scott Peterson, you've got the poster child. They can't get past that side by side picture of Scott with Amber and then Lacey sitting pregnant next to the Christmas tree at a party by herself. That mm-hmm. kind of National Enquirer image is burned into a La Cunada matron's brain, the frontal lobe. Now, Harvey, that same woman says to herself, what's that little blah, blah, blah? And they've, and I won't say the word, but you know what, you can fill in the blank. What's he doing going? Yeah, trollop is a perfect way to put it. It's not derogatory. Well, I guess it is pejorative. But what's she doing going up to the hotel room? That idea of what does she expect if she's going up to a hotel room? Right. You know, even though in California and specifically in Hollywood, doing business at the hotel room is kind of standard operating procedure at the Four Seasons Beverly Hills Hotel in the Bel Air. But that's a whole different issue. But that's kind of the default.
That's an interesting point where everyone goes, what was she doing in his room, or what did she expect when he called her to his room? But yeah, you're right. I've done a ton of meetings in hotel rooms in New York because that's where you are. There's no.
I've done it. I remember the first time I met Chris Brown, the evening or more, actually it was morning after the incident with Rihanna. And that was going back 14 or 15 years. It was in a hotel room. We met in a hotel room. I met him countless times in a hotel room. Michael Jackson, a zillion times in a hotel room. I could go on and on and on for various clients. I always met them in hotel rooms. That was kind of standard operating procedure. So, you know, I understand both sides of that issue.
So, wait, can
we talk about Drew? Because yes. I've got some very strong feelings on Drew.
Please.
You know, we live in a, what do they call it? The cancel culture. I call it the internet has to sacrifice somebody. We got to take down and kill somebody and put their head on a pike every single day. That's kind of where we have devolved into. I mean, I got to live it last year. Drew's getting to live it this year. And there was, for those of you who don't know, there was a mashup that was done and that was circulated and got some views and some ticks of Drew. But it was done, in my humble opinion, out of context. Didn't talk about what Drew, the context that Drew was talking about. And by the way, I think Drew may be vindicated very shortly, because it looks to me like part of his complaints, when you take it in context, he was pressured. Then Gary could probably weigh in here with one of Gary's buddies. What's the name? What's his name, Gary? Who wrote that marvelous article.
Yeah, his name's Glenn Rockowitz, and you can find him on Twitter at Just A Ride. And he's a very interesting guy, Adam. He's a cancer survivor a few different times. He was an SNL writer for a few minutes. Then he went on to be an advertising executive, and he was doing ads for big companies like Microsoft and Southwest and Hawaiian Airlines. And he would put his own voice in the pitches that he would give these people. And he ended up becoming a huge VO guy. They liked his voice, and he's now a crazy VO artist. And he's just a very talented, funny guy. And he wrote a short article in defense of Dr. Drew. You can go to my Twitter, and we'll put it out on the Adam Carolla Show Twitter tomorrow as well.
And it was interesting because he talked about, look, what's interesting to me about coronavirus and everybody acts like we knew what this was when it was coming. We knew there was a virus. We knew, you know, depending on which reports you look at, you can look at the World Health Organization. You can look at our supposed leaks from the national security or intelligence agencies. We knew there was something going on in Wuhan. We now know that it's either you're eating bats or it was made in a lab. I mean, there's various theories as to what it was, and conspiracy theories abound. But we know that there was something going on in China, that China clamped down on it. That we knew that it was transmitted from person to person. And there were various theories. But the interesting thing about this is that our knowledge of this particular virus grows by the day and changes by the day. Medically, the science behind it. You know, at first, remember, harken back to maybe 3 weeks ago, we weren't so sure this was airborne, right? Do you remember that, Adam? When it was just wash your hands, we don't think it's airborne. Then all of a sudden, people started talking about, wait a second, this may be airborne. But then we started talking, it may be left on surfaces. Then you can't touch. So now there's even pushback, and I've seen this, and I, you know, some of it is quackery, some of it isn't, that part of the problem is that there is the treatment. And I saw where David Latt, who famously was a writer for Above the Law, I think the editor of Above the Law, he contracted the coronavirus. They put him on a ventilator. He was a marathon runner, and he wrote an article talking about how the ventilator was debilitating and devastating, even though he thinks it saved his life. And his, I believe it was his father, who was a doctor, had warned him, you know, once you get on the ventilator, your odds go up to something 60 to 80%. You'll never get off alive. So I'm not even sure. And there's some scientists and doctors who are suggesting now that that may not even be the correct necessary treatment. We may be, that may be kind of overkill, literally, and pun intended. Right. And well, so Drew, go on. I don't mean
that. Well, I was going to say that I read an article a couple of days ago or read a transcript of a report out of the Bay Area, or at least up north. It made the most sense to me. And I'm just sitting around listening to see what sounds like it makes sense. California, last I checked, had about 500 dead people out of 40 million people. All right. So in that regard, Drew was correct in California. Now, I'm not talking about nationally, but he lives in California. Some states took it harder than others. But California, 500 out of 40 million is not a lot at all. And I know there's, you know, hero crusaders on the internet who want to talk about, well, yeah, tell that to the surviving members of the family members of the 500. Blow me, you douchebags. I understand it. People die. I'm not making fun of those people. I'm trying to have a civil conversation that has math involved. So don't do that thing where it's like, you talk to the survivors of the...
Well, you know who also you should talk to? I'd like to bring into the conversation, because if you're going to do the math, that's great. Do the math, because... By the way, there's also 500 people who didn't die because they weren't on the roads and didn't get in accidents and things of that nature. So
right.
I'm not diminishing. This is a nasty, wicked virus, clearly.
But the theory.
But you have to talk about what he was talking about, and you have to talk about it the same way that Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci do. They're sitting there with charts that are talking about the flattening the curve. Those are deaths. Those are deaths. They're talking about death. You can't say it's okay for them to talk about death, but it's not okay for Drew to talk about death.
Well, that's all we're talking about. I mean, it's all, you know, there's only one way to discuss it, and that's how many, what is the population versus how many people have died from it. So the theory, and Gary had a chart up, but I don't recall.
It was
I'm not
making,
sure exactly what it was referring to.
It yes. was making you right. As of the date of this recording, the number of deaths in California is 544, and it's...
You know. Okay, the projections were much higher. So here's my point. Tell me, I want you to put your lawyer cap on, which is usually yarmulke, and just usually...
And it's just Passover, and as the Arabs were the first Christian nation, and it's Good Friday... You should, you know, come on, let's...
Okay, let's not go there. All right, okay. But just listen. Tell me what you think of this. This theory is Los Angeles and California is not being hit. Los Angeles County, 10 million people. I don't know, we had 200 deaths. You know, we're not being decimated. Los Angeles is a tourist mecca for Chinese people. There's more Chinese people coming here from China, direct flights up to 8,000 a day to LA. I think it's LAX, straight from China. The travel quarantine is at the end of January. And even the travel quarantine from China is just no more direct from China. You could fly somewhere to Europe and then fly to Los Angeles. So California and Los Angeles, and there's probably more Chinese in this area than there are in any other area in the world beside China. I think we're probably second in most.
Well,
it's kind of like
there's more Ferraris Chinese
here than there is in Italy.
The greatest area of the diaspora is the San Gabriel Valley, one of the greatest areas,
right,
within 10-mile radius of where you and I live.
Right. So there's Mike August is right in his neighborhood is mostly Chinese. So there's a ton of traffic going back and forth from China to Los Angeles and to Southern California back in December, November, the whole month of January. When this thing is breaking out in China, you have people going. Now, China says, well, you know, we didn't notice anything until January, and then they revise it to December. Then it goes to early December. Who knows what they're lying about? They could have known about this thing in November. Sure. So people for a full 3 or 4 months are going back and forth from China to Los Angeles and Southern California. And yet we're not decimated by this at all. We have some of the lowest numbers around. I don't know how much, you know, I'm not talking about Montana, but I mean, populations of 40 million people with 500 dead, that's statistically almost nothing. Why are we not decimated in California and in Los Angeles with all the traffic coming from China unchecked for numbers of months?
So there's several theories. One would be the people who advocate for what has been done will say, okay, that's because Gavin Newsom and Eric Garcetti were prescient and they have these stay-at-home orders and that stopped the transmission.
But that's 3 weeks old, not 3 months
exactly.
old.
Exactly. Right. And they'll say also, we are more sprawling and we're a car culture, especially in Southern California. So we don't have mass transportation the way they do in New York, although San Francisco does. And therefore, and by the way, San Francisco also has a very vibrant and large, thriving Asian Chinese community. I have the counterweight to that is that there is some evidence which points to the fact that the coronavirus was on the West Coast as early as December, January. Now, you know, you can say it's anecdotal, there aren't studies, whatever. If we ever do what we should have done in the first place, which is have robust antibody testing initially, we'd find this out. But if it is the fact that it was here and it was first here before it went anywhere else, and we kind of got and developed what's called herd immunity in the West, on the West Coast, before it went to other places. And if it turns out that stay-at-home orders in large urban areas like New York, like Detroit, are actually causing the problem, where you're incubating the problem by putting all of the people who may be asymptomatic in with the people who are vulnerable, that would be an interesting twist at the end of the day, wouldn't it?
Well, the herd immunity part of this makes sense because there's two other components to this. There was what we thought was a bad beginning to the flu season, I think, in December and January. And now I talk to people. I talked to the aforementioned Mike August, and he's like, oh, my wife Doreen was sick as hell in the beginning of January, whatever. She said it was the worst flu she'd had. So she's a very Asian community they live in. This is long before any travel bans. And it would make utter sense to me that one of the most trafficked hub from China would be LAX, and there is no travel ban. And we're unaware of this for 3 months. That's hundreds of thousands of people going back and forth.
So get this. So I've got somebody who works for me. I won't identify. I don't want him or her to be identified. But this particular person arrived in LAX in January. This particular person was coming from some of the hot spots. This particular person had what the person thought was the worst bout of the flu they'd ever had in January in New York. This particular person had such a bad throat that they got a throat culture. I just looked at the record for the throat culture. It came back negative, but said it was a viral infection, negative for strep, but they weren't testing back then, which leads me to believe that in early January, exactly what you said, that this was already prevalent in the West Coast, and obviously because LA, New York is so highly traveled, had gone to New York as well.
Yeah. Gary's reading that now they go back to mid-November in China. So you have the second half of November, you have all of December, and then you have all of January, which is 2.5 months of unfettered travel between China directly and LAX. It of course stands to reason that multiple infected people would come here to the Southland and that we would be experiencing this in 2019 and with no understanding of what it was other than, you know, take some aspirin, drink some Gatorade and ride it out. You got the bad flu. And I think also this article mentioned that we thought it was a bad flu season. So
correct.
Now going with herd immunity and I'm going with mistaken for a flu. And I'm also, when they're talking about this spike, this surge that doesn't seem to be materializing, I'm going back and thinking maybe it already did. Maybe we already experienced this. To me, that's one of the more plausible explanations as to what's going on in California and in Los Angeles versus New York or other places. All right, let me hit credible.com online marketplace to get you pre-qualified student loans, refinancing rates from up to 10 different lenders. So now is the time, people. Let's see if we can knock a few points off those loans and stop paying us so much in interest. If you've got a student loan and if you've got student loan debt, you could benefit with the lower rate. You save on interest and you lower your monthly payment as well. With a shorter loan term, you could get get debt free faster and consolidate your student loan bills in one place. You can see actual pre-qualified rates from up to 10 lenders, not estimates. These are rates from 10 lenders. Only takes a few minutes, doesn't impact your credit. They'll never sell your data, so you won't get spam on your phone from dozens of other lenders. It is credible.com. Right, Gary?
That's right. Please visit credible.com/doubt. That's credible.com/doubt. And when you refinance your student loans using this link, they'll give you a $200 gift card. Fill in a couple of pieces of info to check what rates you're eligible for. Again, that's credible.com/doubt.
So sorry. I also saw, and Gary, maybe you can pull it up, that is it Sweden that's taking a different tack
yes.
on this, the whole
yes.
thing? Where in Sweden, they're doing what at least logically seems to make some sense, but I don't know how you enforce it. They're saying they're quarantine the people over a certain age, quarantine the vulnerable, and then have social distancing for the rest of the population. Have you seen this?
Yeah, and I guess we're seeing how it's working. I don't know how it's working. Danger of herd immunity. I'm looking at Sweden's relaxed approach to corona could already be backfiring. Now, here's the deal, though. When you read the headlines are always super negative and always meant to freak everyone out. So I'd have to see some numbers. Somebody tweeted me the other day that went, why don't you listen to the experts, asshole? And I mm-hmm. said, you mean the experts who gave us the food pyramid? Those experts or these other experts? Which experts am I listening to? Because last I checked, they were arguing over whether eggs were good for you or not for the last 45 years.
Right.
Look, here's what I'm saying. They're experts. I get it. But their batting average has not been any better than most people you know who have just wisdom and can think logically. Like Drew's been taken out to the woodshed and beaten for his proclamations and prognostications,
right.
And proclamations, but he's turning out to be closer to correct than all the people that are screaming at it.
And by the way, if every freaking comment, or not everyone, but 9 out of 10 didn't go, you faux news, you Fox News, blah, 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 blah. You know, when you mix it in with all the ad hominem stuff, and you instantly go to the default of your political stripe. And mind you, that's not my political stripe. But I do know Drew, and you know Drew, and I've known Drew for longer than most people. And I will tell you, there isn't a devious bone in that guy's body. I mean, he takes things to heart. He tries to do good. When he gets passionate, it's because he believes something. And for all the assholes who don't know him and don't know his body of work, fuck you.
Right. Thank you. Very well said. So I don't know how it's playing out in Sweden. Gary will be able to figure that out. I think there are examples. See, here's kind of the problem. You can point to examples of places or cities that did quarantine and ones that didn't quarantine or stay in place and shelter and all that kind of stuff. And you could probably show examples of how it worked or didn't work in any given city. My thing is, I got no problem with staying at home. It's one of those things where it's like, do we know? Don't we know? I got my herd immunity theory, but fine. But when you start talking to people and they're like, we can have no discussions about going back to work until the end of May, I think to myself, wait a minute. Like, first off, businesses are going out, they're going under. And unless something, and I'm not talking about New York or Sweden. I don't go to New York or Sweden. I'm talking about where I live in Los Angeles. If something doesn't happen in a meaningful way in the next 2 weeks, people are going to just start drifting back to work. That's my belief, is that people, not that they're going to break the law per se, even though they would be breaking the law, they're just going to start drifting back to work, because at some point we're going to need a surge. And if we don't get that surge, people are going to do the math and get back to it. That's my
opinion. By the way, I'm not so sure, and it'll be interesting. We can look back in 2 months from now. You know, what are you going to do? At some point, it's a virus. The virus mutates. The virus is out there. It's in the population. There's going to be a second wave. There's going to be a third wave. We've not eliminated, you know, the Spanish flu was over 100 years ago. Flu has continued to kill people annually for 100 years since. So this idea that somehow this is going to be the end of this, we haven't cured flu. We haven't cured the common cold. We have not cured cancer. There is going to be, at a certain point, there's going to have to be, you know, to borrow a legal term, some assumption of risk. There is not a risk-free environment in life.
Well, you know, there's a thing where we made the proclamation that we have zero tolerance for everything, you know, a child being left behind or an elderly person not getting world-class healthcare. And we do this all the time, but open your front door and there's 50,000 homeless people sleeping on the street. So you can't just make the proclamation that we're at whatever we have zero tolerance for, if one person dies or whatever. First off, you can't run a society that way. Everything is weighed against a risk. There wouldn't be a building higher than two stories if you weren't weighing things against risk. It was funny. You're going to laugh because Garcetti was describing, he was talking about canceling the Easter egg roll at the park, and you know how dangerous that is. And Greg Hunt at the park was canceled, and that the park was closed down and blah, blah, blah. But he did say that the bathrooms would be open for people experiencing homelessness.
Right.
And exactly. I said, I like the flavor, the English that he puts on his verbiage. And I thought, I wish Garcetti was around to describe me in high school. He could have said, Adam's not a horrible student. He's experiencing a 1.6 GPA. He's experiencing 822 on his SATs. He's experiencing taking high school math, but not algebra. He's also experiencing being a ceramics major. But don't you call him a bad student. These are just things he experiences at North Hollywood High. I like the notion that homeless people are no longer homeless. They're just like you and I with a bout of the homelessness. We could just experience homelessness.
And apparently, you know, there has not, remember all of the gloom and doom about this was going to ravage the homeless population, which is fairly, you know, I could walk five blocks over here. Hasn't ravaged it yet, has it?
Well, how would it look? Imagine you were making a movie. Let's just say you're making a movie and the movie's about a pandemic, and the pandemic is spread from person to person through contact or spittle or mouth vapor, and that everyone needs to be 6 feet apart and shelter at home. Otherwise, the citizens of this city and of the country will be devastated by this. Okay. So imagine you were writing this movie and you said, okay, the city which has the most homeless in it is Los Angeles. We got the horse trails taped off. Everyone's locked in their house. But then there's 50,000 homeless people living on top of each other, literally in cardboard boxes and exchanging God knows what kind of fluids on a daily basis. And then you're writing this pandemic screenplay, and then your writing partner goes, okay, so the first to go are the homeless, right?
Right.
Every one of them is dying on the streets of Los Angeles. And I went, they're fine. And he went, what? No, they'd be the first to go. First off, they're weakened. Their immune system is compromised. They're compromised. They're drug addled. They're elderly oftentimes. They're on the street. They are going to be the first to go. And by the way, they're going to go in by the thousands. They're not going to go by the hundreds. They're going to be, if the homeless population in Los Angeles was 50,000, we're going to get at least 30,000 of them out of there. And it's like, nah, they're basically okay. They're as they were. Well, that would, if you were writing that as a screenplay, it wouldn't make sense at all.
Exactly. It doesn't. So, but is it possible? I just posit. Is it possible that we don't understand exactly what's going on, that medical science doesn't understand exactly what's going on, and that people are winging it as they go along? I mean, we weren't supposed to wear masks, right?
Right.
Now we're supposed to wear masks.
Well, in the herd theory, for me is A, all the people that have been dousing themselves and their kids in Purell for the last 10 years have a compromised immune system because they've been scrubbing into eating a sandwich like they're scrubbing into surgery. So everybody who's been going at it with the antibacterial everything has compromised their own immune system over there. And we're talking about over a 20-year span. The homeless people have been sleeping with the rats and the cockroaches and smoking other people's cigarette butts off the street for 10 years. So A, maybe they got a little of that alley cat sewer rat in them, number one. Number two, it most certainly had to get to them. How could it not get to them? There's no sheltering at all.
How is it possible? And by the way, maybe Gary, I'll send you some pictures on my way home. I'll drive by and take some pictures, because certainly they have not alleviated the situation. It's right here and it's as bad as it's ever been, except it has not kind of gone through here like a knife through hot butter as predicted.
Well, it's the most vulnerable population according to the rules we're laying out, right?
Right.
So if you just did this, I will put on my courtroom yarmulke and I will make this case. According to what we hear on every TV channel and read in every newspaper, the most vulnerable are people who aren't sheltering, who don't have access to all the sanitizer, Purell, who aren't wearing masks, who have pre-existing conditions, who have weakened and compromised immune system. This is the homeless population. So by your logic, the county USC should be overrun with homeless people suffering from the coronavirus and or dying in droves in the streets. They should be just, there were three homeless dead a day, according to Dr. Drew in LA County 6 months ago. There should be 25 dead a day and homeless because of coronavirus. So if it's not affecting that crowd, and I haven't heard it. Now, maybe Garcetti and maybe Gavin Newsom want to stay away from that third rail known as homelessness, because that's a little, that's on their watch. But I have not heard any news reports. I've not heard any testimony about this, and I've not read any articles about it. Have you?
I saw, and Gary, I saw an can interview. Look it up. Yeah, Gary, look it up. I saw an interview with, I believe, one of the directors of one of the missions. I saw a statistic where I think it was this week was the first confirmed homeless either contraction or death. But other than that, I've watched Catherine Barger, who's the chairperson of the LA County Supervisors. I've listened as much as I can take of Garcetti. I've watched as much as I can take of Gavin. And I haven't seen or been told, or it hasn't been reported, that the scourge has hit the homeless population. So I am perplexed. I'd love to, so I'm sure somebody will tweet at us and tell us we're all fucked up, but I haven't seen it. Where is, so what else is going on? What is the counter argument to that if it isn't there? What is the other storyline to your movie script?
So, well,
yes, go ahead.
So the most news,
LA County, sorry, who was the LA County health supervisor you mentioned, Mark?
The Catherine Barger is the supervisor who is chairperson of the LA County five supervisors. And I think they removed the sheriff who was the head of emergency services. And they got somebody else in charge of a woman who I saw give a press conference yesterday.
Catherine Barger needs to visit Marcia Clark's hairstylist. And if it's the one I'm thinking of, I think
I don't. No. That's, I think, the other woman, because Catherine, you're going to get bitch slapped by Paulette or one of her crew if you start ragging on Barger.
Well, the other one, one of them needs to make the same transformation Martha Clark made. Clark. No, Catherine Barger. No, I'm thinking of the silver hair.
You're thinking of the silver hair.
The natural.
The woman with the, yeah, exactly.
Who is
find her, Gary. I think she's head of the county health department, or she's head of health services. I know they removed the sheriff, I think, at one point, or there was at least a controversy about removing the sheriff. And by the way, I filed eight lawsuits this morning. There she is.
She needs to go to Marcia Clark's hair. And by the way, who also did a wonderful job with Lisa Page, if anyone remembers that name from.
Yeah, I do. Back in the day. And while she does it, I'd like to go there as well. What are you doing for a haircut? You cut yourself?
I got my shears out, and I literally just sheared myself. I'm probably going to do it again. You get the number one out, you do the
right,
side,
you
get
the
number
sides.
Three out, you do the top. Yeah, it's not the best haircut I've ever had, but I don't know. I do feel like I have bargaining power when I go up the street to Sport Cuts or whatever.
Right. That's where I go. Same place. You want the MVP. You say, I'm not taking the MVP at your price. I'll take a triple MVP at my price.
Right. I'm going full Armo on them. I'm going, I've learned a lot from this tragedy. One thing I learned is I can cut my own goddamn hair. Now,
that's exactly
I'm
right.
A busy man and I'm a wealthy man, but I'm not a dumb man. Okay, so let's take your all-star, what do you call it, the most valuable player, let's take that sports cut. You got it up there for $31.75, call it 40 with the tip. I got $20.
Exactly. And I want rinse, repeat, and massage three times.
Right. And if I could do the back of my fucking neck, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
I tried that today. I was doing it today. It's not, I don't have to look at it. So I just shave the part that's kind of fuzzy.
All right. Let me hit Tommy John. And then I want you to tell me what you filed today. Tommy John,
I will.
When you do these Zooms, and we're here for over an hour. Are you filing with your feet underneath the desk, or is this the longest you go without filing a lawsuit? Are you signing documents with a pen and your foot?
I sign documents every time you do a commercial. I'm filing a lawsuit.
So you don't have a Sharpie between your big toe and second toe, and you're not just signing paperwork underneath the desk?
We have electronic filing now in California. Okay.
So Ben's not going to pop up into the picture?
No. Boring cop is typing away as we speak.
I have him like John Jr. underneath Kennedy's desk there, so famously. Or was that Marilyn Monroe? Anyway, Tommy John, that's what I want to say. For the next few weeks, you go ahead and file. I'll file this commercial for Tommy John. For the next few weeks, or God forbid, months, we're going to spend a lot of time at home, and that means comfortable loungewear and underwear for a limited time. All customers get 20% off site-wise, plus free shipping. The softest, most breathable proprietary fabrics, a beautiful form and function, no roll waistbands, no wedgie guarantee, no visible panty lines for the ladies. Quick draw fly saves a ton of time. And if you don't love your first pair, you'll get a full refund with your best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. The loungewear is the best. I wore the shirt for 17 days straight. Eventually I had to put it in a hamper. People are starting to complain. It is the best. It's Tommy John, right, Gary?
That's right. You could be experiencing comfort. For a limited time, go to TommyJohn.com/Adam to get a 20% off site-wide plus free shipping. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off site-wide plus free shipping. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
So what'd you file?
So we're filing on behalf of the first wave of lawsuits. We filed about 10 today, is for various entities on the business interruption, which has got to be one of the most annoying things that the insurance company does. You could pay an insurance company for year after year after year, and then the one time you really need them, I mean, I don't need them, by the way. Somebody sues me, I'll deal with it. Somebody does anything else, I'll deal with it. But when you get shut down, your tenants can't pay, or your restaurants can't open, you would expect that the insurance company would come. And so then their immediate default response is, well, the business interruption is if there's property damage. I said, really, bitch? The property damage is that the coronavirus, supposedly, based on our knowledge right now, is either... It can be on surfaces, it can be airborne, it can be anywhere. That's property. My property is damaged. I have to shut down. That's business interruption. Sorry, we've excluded the pandemic. I said the pandemic isn't the problem. The problem is I've got a mayor and I've got a county and I've got a governor that are closing me down by civil order. Sorry, we don't cover civil order. What do you mean you don't cover civil order? Whatever. I will once again say what I've said to you for the last 4 weeks. Where is Warren Buffett, who's sitting on billions of dollars of cash, free cash, from his various insurance companies? Where is he right now? Laying back, waiting to either buy more stock with the insurance money that he should be distributing. People want to talk about the scam that is America. The scam is the insurance companies who take all of your premiums. By the way, has anybody gotten a refund check from their auto insurance company?
No.
Because they're not driving? I haven't gotten mine. State Farm, by the way, who I insure with, is the policy holder owned company. Where's my refund check, State Farm, for the lack of accidents that have taken place? So we filed lawsuits today. We're going to just lean into this. And by the way, where's the insurance commissioner? I mean, who could be found on a milk carton? Ricardo Lara. Thank you to whoever tweeted at me when I thought it was. Where are these guys? Why isn't the insurance commissioner out there telling the insurance companies, hey, you want to hide behind some kind of an exclusion? That's fine. Go hide in Montana. You want to do business in California and take people's money? Then you got to pay when people really need it. And that's going to be the argument.
Well, where is, it's not a sexy subject. It's all, you know, doom and gloom and waiting for the surge and people piling up and death commissions. And we're going to decide who's going to live and who's going to die by some sort of random wheel you spin at the hospital. That dominates the news. The nuts and bolts stuff doesn't seem to get any ink. But yes, where is the insurance commissioner? Why aren't we having these discussions?
Yeah. Why is it that all, why are my banks, and I love this, my bankers are telling me, go to this other bank, go to the big banks. Why am I going to the big bank? The whole idea is I was with you. Well, we don't know what the government's going to do. And then why are they telling me, go apply for the government? No, I don't want to apply to the government. Why am I taking my tax money back? Why don't you do your job and defer for 3 months the payments so I can continue to employ people? Where's the insurance commissioner ordering the insurance companies to give the money back right now? Why are the insurance companies sitting on the money and investing it in the stock market at the lows?
Well, and right. And every second with the kind of money they're talking about is millions of dollars. All right. I'm going to tell people they can check this out. They can go to my YouTube page, youtube.com/Adam Carolla. And I think we'll put this episode up so you can watch at home and see just how animated Mark gets when he talks about ne'er-do-well insurance companies and commissioners.
I'd just like to add also the yes. Judd Apatow episode and every subsequent Reasonable Doubt while quarantine is going on, we will continue to put on Adam's YouTube. So you can always listen. You can always watch. Enjoy however you like.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. And yeah, think about Gary. Is there no articles about the homeless population being decimated by Corona? And if there isn't, that's a tell.
The experiencing homelessness thing appears to be a party line because I found a couple articles using that exact verbiage. And the only articles and stories about homelessness is about Project Room Key, where LA County is spending God knows how much money to get homeless people into hotel rooms. But there's no real evidence of, you know, as a result of X number of deaths or hospitalizations or anything like that. It's just, look, we're putting them in hotel rooms.
Well, there, if you go to County USC, and I've been to County USC before I had the aforementioned insurance, and you go down there and throw yourself on the mercy of the lobby and of the court and get some free fixings if you're sick and you don't have insurance. County USC has 10,000 homeless people within a 3-block radius of County USC. If people were being decimated by coronavirus, then their lobby and waiting room would be filled with homeless people who were expiring. So minus that, there's something else going on and there's something else to investigate. I don't know what it is, but there has to be alternative. There must be investigation in different directions instead of just the party line of shut it all down. No one goes anywhere. This thing's going to spike. It should have spiked already and it should have been in the homeless community. All right. So we'll keep you guys posted. Mark, any of your businesses that remain open?
No, we just sit here, bleed money and pay people to sit at home and tell me they're working when they're not. That's the story of my life this week. If you're listening.
If it makes you feel better, Mark, I realized that, you know, they're guys who work for me play video games at the office. So what's the difference whether they play them at home?
If they play it at home, it's kind of what I feel. Say, like, you know, I got a couple who just thumb their nose at me and say, yeah, you know what? I'm not even going to fill out my hourly sheets. Okay, fine. Got it. I'm not going to even fill out your unemployment application.
You know how much I've saved on trail mix now that my guys are at home. All right. So until next time, Adam Carolla from Mark Garrigo saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all new episode. This is Carolla Digital.